Hello, it is Tuesday, June 9th. Welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Andrew Jung. Demonstrators surrounding a ballot counting center in Seoul's Songpa district have now camped outside the facility for 5 days. More on that on today's news briefing. In our in-depth news analysis segment, we'll be breaking down the China-North Korea summit between Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un that concluded today. Plus, on Hallyu Highlights, Bernie Cho joins us to share news about SM Entertainment heading to Europe and headlines about K-pop girl groups aespa and LE SSERAFIM. All that and more on Korea 24. The blockade of a ballot counting center in Seoul's Songpa district related to ballot shortages during the June 3rd local elections has entered its 5th day. This came as the National Election Commission has raised the tally of voting centers that ran out of ballots during the elections from the previously reported 50 to 91. For more on the prolonged protests and the other major headlines of the day, we have in the studio with us Deputy Editor-in-Chief of KBS World's English News Service, Kim In-kyung, with us. Hello, In-yo.
Hello, Andrew.
The protest over ballot shortages has entered its 5th day. What's the current situation regarding the blockade at the ballot counting center in Seoul?
Well, thousands are still gathered at the SK Olympic Handball Gymnasium, which was the designated counting center in Seoul's Songpa district. The size of the crowd has fallen from more than 10,000 Monday night to around 2,000 as of 4:15 p.m. Tuesday. The fluctuation occurs because most of the protesters in their 20s and 30s leave during the day and return to the rally after 7 p.m. The protesters claim ballot shortages violated their constitutional rights and are demanding a revote, with some in the crowd also chanting about alleged election rigging. The participants have called to conduct a peaceful rally, but there were reports of clashes on site, such as when some protesters blocked female youth handball players from entering the gymnasium and demanded proof of identity on Monday. The police have dispatched riot squads in case the situation escalates.
Amid this public outcry, the National Election Commission has revealed new information regarding the scale of the ballot shortages. In-kyung, can you give us the details?
Sure. The NEC said the number of voting centers that ran out of ballots during the elections was 91, not 50 as it previously reported. The NEC said Monday that 91 locations were short of ballots and had used additional ones sent from the election watchdog. The locations include 42 in Seoul, 23 in Gyeonggi Province, 11 in Incheon, 4 in Daegu, 3 in Busan. Out of the 91 locations, 26 had to temporarily stop voting. That's also up from the previously announced 22. To investigate what caused the shortages, the NEC has formed a committee consisting of 6 people from outside the watchdog. The investigation will run for 10 days from Wednesday.
And how are the political parties reacting to this crisis?
The ruling party has pledged prompt action to initiate a parliamentary investigation. Democratic Party floor leader Han Byung-do said Tuesday that the ruling side will seek a plenary session this week to introduce plans for the parliamentary probe and that if necessary, it'll push to revise the Public Official Election Act and the Election Commission Act. People Power Party Chief Chang Dong-hyuk has called on the NEC to declare the elections null and void and to hold nationwide re-elections. Chang also said there were verified cases in 12 electoral districts where candidates won exactly the same number of votes in early voting and that the matter should be looked at by a special prosecutor.
Moving on to the North Korea-China summit held on Monday, In-kyung, what were the key takeaways from their discussion?
According to the North State-run Korean Central News Agency, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and Chinese President Xi Jinping agreed to open a new chapter of development in bilateral ties by expanding overall cooperation. The KCNA said the leaders reached a consensus to enhance strategic cooperation, firmly protect each other's country's sovereignty, security and interests, and jointly defend regional and global peace and development. China's state-run Xinhua News Agency said Xi called for efforts to bolster two-way exchanges in diplomacy, law enforcement and the military. But there was no mention of peninsula issues or denuclearization during their talks. Instead, the emphasis on sovereignty and mutual interests has raised questions about whether China is tacitly endorsing the North's nuclear status.
And did the South Korean government address such concerns?
The foreign ministry downplayed the concerns. Ministry spokesperson Park Il said in a briefing on Tuesday that China has reaffirmed that it stands by its position on peninsula affairs. He said China confirmed during its summit with the U.S. last month that it shares with Washington the joint goal of making the peninsula nuclear-free. Park said the denuclearization of the Korean peninsula is a goal set by the international community, and the government will steadfastly adhere to that goal.
We'll be talking more about this in our in-depth news analysis segment. But meanwhile, President Lee Jae-myung has left for Europe to attend the Group of Seven summit in France next week after visits to Belgium, Italy, and the Vatican. In-kyung, what's the itinerary and the main objectives of this trip?
The president's first destination is Brussels, where he'll stay Tuesday and Wednesday and hold separate talks with the leaders of Belgium and the European Union. From Thursday through Saturday, he will visit Italy for a meeting with President Sergio Mattarella, followed by a summit with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni. On Sunday and Monday, the president will be in the Vatican, where he's scheduled to meet with Pope Leo XIV and Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin to discuss peace in the Korean Peninsula and around the world. He will then attend the G7 meeting, which runs Monday through Wednesday in the French town of Evian. He's attending the event at the invitation of the G7, and it'll be South Korea's second consecutive G7 summit as an invited state. He just celebrated the first anniversary of his inauguration, and the presidential office says his European tour is part of a strategy to establish South Korea as a responsible global powerhouse.
But going back to the local elections, police have raided the South Gyeongsang Provincial Government Complex over allegations that deep fake content was used and public officials violated the Public Official Election Act in the re-election campaign of Governor Park Wan-soo of the main opposition People Power Party. In-kyung, what can you tell us?
The Gyeongnam Provincial Police sent investigators to the complex to search the Public Information Division and the ENG camera content room today. The provincial police said searches were also carried out at locations outside the government complex. Earlier, the police launched an investigation into 9 people, including officials in Park's election camp and current and former provincial government employees related to the alleged dissemination of false propaganda. On May 29th, the Provincial Election Commission filed a complaint with the prosecution after someone who'd worked for Park's camp said provincial employees had instructed them to make deepfake and other illegal AI content to damage the reputation of Park's opponent, Kim Kyung-soo of the Democratic Party.
And that's all we have for today's news briefing. Thank you, In-kyung.
Thank you, Andrew.
Chinese President Xi Jinping and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un pledged to deepen cooperation in a closely watched summit on Monday as Xi made his first visit to North Korea in nearly 7 years. The two-day visit is also Xi's first trip abroad this year and comes after consecutive summits with U.S. President Donald Trump and Russian leader Vladimir Putin in Beijing last month. The ties between Beijing and Pyongyang have been the focus of questions in recent years as Kim has appeared to draw closer to Russia. Analysts say Xi's visit is likely an attempt to reassert its influence over the reclusive state. To get expert analysis on Xi's visit to North Korea, we are joined on the line by two guests. First, we have Jonathan Chang, the China bureau chief for the Wall Street Journal and my former boss. Hello, John.
Hi, good to be here, Andrew.
And we also have Chinese studies professor Joel Atkinson from the Hankuk University of Foreign Studies. Hello, professor.
Yeah, hello. Nice to be with you.
Okay, to our first question, we go to John. For our listeners, could you give us the details about Xi's summit with Kim? And what do we know so far about what was discussed and what they have agreed on?
Sure, yeah. So Xi Jinping is in Pyongyang, but he's wrapping up the second day of this two-day summit. It is relatively short. Today, it does seem like it's higher on the symbolism. It's less about what was necessarily discussed. Yesterday, we did see them meet and we did see them issue a statement, but it was relatively light on details, on specifics. They talked a lot about wanting to align themselves more closely. They talked a lot about shared values and shared interests and all the rest of it, but there wasn't a whole lot that was very substantial there. So we can only imagine what was actually discussed behind closed doors, but certainly based on their readouts, it was pretty spare.
Well, we all know that it's very difficult to cover these summits just because of all the secrecy involved. But Jonathan, why is Xi visiting North Korea, and what could be the purpose of the Chinese leader's visit?
Well, I think that's also part of the puzzle for us watching from the outside. I mean, even though I'm in Beijing, we don't have very much access to the Chinese government and what they're thinking about, and certainly Pyongyang even harder. But I think, as you noted at the top of the show here, it's been 7 years. We know that ostensibly the purpose of the visit is in part to mark the 65th anniversary of this alliance between these two neighbors. And yet, it does come as well in the context of the recent visit of Donald Trump to Beijing, Vladimir Putin to Beijing, again, as you noted there. So I think there's a lot of dynamics. There are a lot of dynamics going on here, and it's hard to separate out exactly what the real main thrust of this is. Certainly, it's been a long time since Xi Jinping was in North Korea. And there's been a lot of talk in the Western world about how close these countries are, China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, and all of them are in the spotlight right now. And I think there's certainly a sense here that with Donald Trump in the White House, things are shifting. Certainly with the Russia-Ukraine war now bogged down in this fourth year, there's a sense that perhaps things are going to be changing as well. But I suspect that there's lots being discussed, there's lots being talked about that we're not aware of behind closed doors. But, you know, there's also some mistrust between these two sides as well. There always has been some mistrust, and it seems like Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un are not particularly close as far as neighboring leaders go. Certainly there's a generation gap between the two of them, but also a lot of frictions over, you know, the nuclear program in North Korea and other things.
Professor Atkinson, we want to ask you similar questions that we've just asked John, but what were some of Xi's goals at the summit?
Yeah, well, as Jonathan said, there's a lot of dynamics going on, and obviously there's going to be multiple intentions, multiple goals at work. And, you know, I think we'll probably discuss a few of those today, but I would highlight one that often gets overlooked, maybe because it's a bit too obvious. But, you know, I think the main intention is to generate this big spectacle, I guess you could call it, of solidarity, warmth, and respect. So Jonathan was talking there about maybe there's not that kind of warmth, but there's certainly a spectacle of warmth. Looking at the Chinese media on this, there's just photo after photo showing every aspect of the welcome. All the details are reported on. Many in the West would see it as perhaps too much information, too much detail. But there's all so much effort put into kind of showing all of that that's gone on. And so that message, I think, of solidarity, it's directed toward the West, to be sure. Not that they're just on the same page, but you know, as Xi Jinping likes to say, you know, great changes unseen in a century are underway, and the region's changing, and the message is that everyone needs to kind of accommodate their solidarity and their kind of growing power and influence, and they're not going to be isolated by the US or others. But also looking at some of the comments, I think Xi Jinping is genuinely concerned about kind of teaching the next generation the value of the relationship. So there's a bit of a inward kind of domestic aspect to it, showing the Chinese public that that the Sino-North Korean relationship is kind of appropriate and worth having, that North Korea is not, you know, sort of a millstone around China's neck, or that North Korea disrespects the Chinese government and so on. So Kim actually, you know, they're just now, personally saw Xi Jinping off at the airport this afternoon. So that shows that kind of highest level of intimacy and respect. And then, you know, maybe there's some of it there is directed also at the North Korean government. There's a few things in there in the statements which kind of show, hint at perhaps Beijing's desire for better cooperation at lower levels. And I think maybe Xi Jinping's trying to get Kim Jong-un to facilitate that to kind of from the top down order a bit more of a lower level cooperative partnership.
Well, there was one more elephant in the room that needed to be addressed. A readout by China's foreign ministry on Monday made no mention of nuclear talks or the Korean Peninsula. John, what's your read into this omission? I know that you have a lot of experience covering China and these nuclear weapons. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's obviously a very touchy issue because there's no question that North Korea has made some great advances on its nuclear program, certainly since the last time Xi Jinping was in Pyongyang. We also know that the lack of mention of denuclearization is not unique to the Sino-North Korean relation. We know that also, you know, in the U.S. as well, you're starting to see less mention of this call for complete denuclearization in North Korea. And I think there are certainly some people in the West who have started to wonder whether or not that ship has already sailed. I think in China, that same debate is happening as well. It's certainly a mixed bag from China's point of view. Certainly to have another country that is standing shoulder to shoulder with you against the U.S.-led West having nuclear weapons, there's obviously some good to that. And yet, I think it also unnerves people in Beijing as well to some level. And so its omission, it's hard to know exactly what to read into it. Certainly, there's an argument that could be made that this means that China has given up as well on this notion that they've effectively accepted North Korea as a de facto nuclear state. But perhaps there's some other reading of this. But again, this is very opaque, and I think it's really open to interpretation.
Professor Atkins, we want to ask you the same thing. What's your take on the omission of denuclearization or nuclear weapons?
Yeah, well, you know, this, you know, is it maybe, you know, I have a, you know, my, you're right, there's no direct omission, but, you know, here I'm being a little bit more speculative, but I thought it was interesting that during the banquet last night, Xi Jinping said basically that he wishes, he sincerely wishes, I think he said, that the Korean people successfully fulfill the goals and tasks set out at the 9th Congress of the Korean Workers' Party. And, you know, it's a matter of record that at that 9th Congress in February, Pyongyang basically said that, you know, the steadfast will of our party is to further and expand and bolster up the state nuclear force. Hmm. So, you know, how Xi Jinping really thinks about it is hard to know, but he's clearly okay implying or leaving hanging this kind of impression that, yeah, that he's fine with North Korea's ongoing nuclearization.
That's a very interesting take there. But Professor Atkins, we want to ask you another question on the visit. This is Xi's first in 7 years and also comes at a time when North Korea has strengthened relations with Russia, which is, I guess, the other elephant in the room that we need to address today. North Korea has deepened cooperation with Russia by supplying troops and weapons to support its war in Ukraine. And in return, North Korea has received economic and military assistance from Moscow. Professor Atkins, is this making China wary somehow?
Yeah, well, again, there's a kind of a mainstream view that there's this kind of, you know, almost jealousy where Xi Jinping kind of feels under pressure because Kim is leaning closer to Putin. You know, it's possible. I've never seen any actual evidence of that. And there are other models, other explanations of what the relationship is, the kind of the mechanics of it, how it works, that I think perhaps fit it a bit better. I would, you know, Xi Jinping has this concept from Mao Zedong of the principle or that primary contradiction. And in his way of thinking, that's the United States or it's Western liberalism or hegemonism or imperialism or whatever you want to call it. And yes, China has contradictions with Russia and North Korea, but those are secondary contradictions. So Xi Jinping's job, I think, as he sees it, is to manage those so that the secondary contradictions are minimized and then maintain that united front against the primary contradiction, which is the US. And there's also this kind of confidence that history is on the party side, that China's big and rising and Russia and North Korea are not on the same level. So they're not really competitors for China's status and influence. And, you know, Russia relies on China for its war in Ukraine. North Korea actually also relies on China. And if China were really against the regime, then it wouldn't last long. So there's a kind of a mutual support against that primary contradiction against the US. But, you know, through this approach, China does not face the full price of that mutual support because the United States is kind of focused on those secondary contradictions. It asks China to do things against Russia and North Korea, and it's even willing to offer concessions for those things, like over Taiwan. And I see China as kind of happy to take those concessions to the bank, but it's never going to manage its relations with Pyongyang and Moscow in a way that hurts that kind of united front cooperation. So for me, at least, that fits the facts better than this idea that, you know, Xi Jinping kind of feels compelled to come in and try to woo Kim Jong-un away from Putin.
Well, Kim Jong-un was very clear about his feelings toward China during the summit on Monday. The North Korean leader called the advancement of North Korea-China relations his, quote, most critical strategic initiative. Kim said that the North will work to make Pyongyang-Beijing ties a model for bilateral relations and that the two sides will jointly contribute to peace and prosperity in the region and around the world. John, what did Kim want to get out of his summit with Xi, and did he get it?
Well, I think it speaks a little bit to the answer that we just heard from Professor Atkinson. I think certainly it, North Korea and Kim Jong-un in particular is, I think he's feeling pretty good right now. He has come to Putin's aid at a time of the Russian leader's need, and he's raised his stature because of it. Last September, he was in Beijing and he was up there on the rostrum at Tiananmen Square alongside Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin and a host of other world leaders. I think he is bolstering his legitimacy. I think he's making himself a real global player. And of course he would want to have good ties with China because China is the world's second most populous nation. It's the world's second largest economy. And on many of the future technologies that matter, China is clearly establishing itself as perhaps a near peer or a peer of the United States. And given how good relations already are with Russia, I think there's a sense that if you have your two northern neighbors, these two giants, these two UN Security Council permanent members on your side, having your back in your corner, I think that's even further bolstering both his international prestige and legitimacy, but also in very practical terms, that you have a nuclear deterrent, but you also have the backing of two larger nuclear powers as well. I think it's a pretty formidable message if you're trying to send a message to Washington or to the West.
Well, we want to ask John more about this growing triangle, if you will. What does Xi's trip to North Korea mean for trilateral ties among China, North Korea, and Russia, which is something that you've just been kind of mentioning? But if you could share a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I think that North Korea, if you go back even to the Kim Jong-il days or Kim Il-sung, they were very good at balancing and playing off Moscow and Beijing. There would be times where they would be tilted more towards one or the other. Sometimes it was because of ideological alignment. Sometimes it was purely tactical and all the rest of it. And so I do think that there's some sense here that there is, at least I find it convincing, that there's some tactical shift here on the part of the North Koreans. I don't want to say it's a shift away from Russia. But again, it's an attempt to have the three-way balance be a little bit healthier and more sustainable. Again, I mean, I think just the fact that you didn't have Xi Jinping in Pyongyang for 7 years, of the meetings that the two men have had, Kim and Xi, I mean, most of those times have been Kim Jong-un in China. And so I think a lot of this trip was about rebalancing, about trying to use the relative advantage that the North Koreans have right now, and use that to raise his stature again, as I mentioned earlier, and also to benefit a little bit from some of the glow that China is enjoying by clearly being a real player when it comes to so many of these critical future technologies.
We want to reshift our focus back to South Korea, where we are. Professor Atkinson, ahead of Xi's trip to North Korea, the South Korean Foreign Ministry said it hopes that exchanges between Pyongyang and Beijing will take place in a way that contributes to peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula, and expects Beijing to play a constructive role in addressing issues related to the peninsula. That is code word for, I guess, nuclear weapons and managing that. But as a final thought, what should South Korea watch out for with regard to the results and the ripple effects of Xi's trip to Pyongyang?
Yeah, well, like Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un have been emphasizing, the situation is evolving. You know, these great changes are underway. North Korea has its two Koreas policy. It's declaring that South Koreans are not compatriots, that the Republic of Korea will be treated as a hostile state. Its nuclear arsenal and its military potency in general is increasing. The world is increasingly multipolar, as they were emphasizing during this visit. China's more assertive towards the United States. And I think part of that is its cooperation with North Korea is kind of more overt, more in your face. And so obviously there's a big gap there between what Beijing considers constructive and conducive to peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula on one hand, and on the other, what makes life easier for South Korea or what South Korea would like. So increasingly, South Korea is in the situation of Beijing and Pyongyang, I think, making peace and stability conditional upon Seoul falling in line with the kind of world they're making together, their preferences. The problem is South Koreans and South Korean voters don't necessarily like those preferences. And then you have the Trump administration not necessarily being supportive of South Korea if it's trying to resist that. So, at the moment, neither Beijing nor Pyongyang are wanting to put real pressure on the Lee administration on Seoul. But I guess what South Korea should watch out for, or rather pay attention to, is this kind of grim message really that's being sent, that is, China's not going to solve South Korea's North Korea nuclear problem. And neither China nor North Korea are going to solve South Korea's Trump problem. So yeah, that's I think that message needs to be digested.
Sounds like South Korea is between a rock and a hard place. But John, what do you think about the position of Seoul at this current moment?
Yeah, I'd agree that obviously it is very volatile right now. You have a lot of shifting dynamics right now. And I think it probably puts some of the onus on the South Korean government to just be a little bit more nimble. You're starting to see that. You can see that with that rapprochement that South Korea has made with Japan, and you wouldn't have expected that from a left-leaning president like Lee Jae-myung, and yet it makes sense at a time when the White House is perhaps not as reliable as it was in the past, where you have on the other side of the 30th parallel, you see a lot more unity. This you can call it a show of unity, but still you get the sense that Pyongyang, Beijing, Moscow are more or less on the same page right now, at a time when the other side, your allies, are a little bit less certain. And so you see that move towards making sure that relations with Japan are stable. And I think that is the sort of thing that we'll probably see out of Seoul and out of many capitals right now, which is a lot of hedging of bets, a lot of not putting all eggs in any one basket. And so I think we'll probably continue to see that certainly while Trump is in office. But, you know, it depends on other factors too as well. I mean, we'll see whether or not Putin's war in Ukraine continues to stand at the stalemate or whether things start to deteriorate for him or otherwise. And I think all of these dynamics need to be watched as well. And same for the midterms in the U.S., in terms of whether that strengthens Trump or not, whether you start to see a potential 2028 candidate emerge as a clear favorite. A lot of cross currents here. The Taiwan situation as well, if that starts to heat up, that is also going to be another factor. So I think if you're in Seoul, you're really going to need to be nimble and ready to pivot and to be opportunistic.
Some words of wisdom from Jonathan Chang. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. That was John Chang again, the China bureau chief for the Wall Street Journal. Thank you, John.
Thanks for having me.
And we also had Professor Atkinson from the Hankuk University of Foreign Studies. Thank you, Professor.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock Market Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index rose 612.52 points, or 8.18% on Tuesday, to close at 8,096.93. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ gained 56.42 points, or 6.19%, to close at 967.81. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next, we are joined by Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets, handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Andrew.
What is our first story today?
With the first group stage match for the South Korean men's football team at this World Cup coming up, the teams and the fans are eager to learn more about what kind of environment they will be competing in. Aside from the stadium field conditions and the opposing team, another X factor is the officiating. We have confirmation of the referee lineup.
Speaking of referees at the World Cup, remember that one referee at that 2002 World Cup game between Italy and Korea? He made the headlines a few times, I think. But who is this referee that will officiate the Korean men's squad's first game at the 2026 World Cup?
Well, FIFA made the announcement Tuesday. The Group A match of the 2026 World Cup between South Korea and the Czech Republic at Estadio Guadalajara in Mexico will be held at 11 a.m. on the 12th Korea time. And it will be officiated by Amin Mohamed Omar of Egypt as the main referee, joined by three other assistant referees. And among them, two are also from Egypt. And the fourth official, Juan Calderon, is the only one from Costa Rica.
Obviously, the head referee will have the most influence over the game. What do we know about Mr. Omar's qualifications and past experience?
According to football media outlet Transfermarkt, Omar has worked as a referee in the Egyptian Premier League since 2013. He obtained his FIFA international referee qualifications in 2017. He did participate in the 2019 FIFA U-17 World Cup in Brazil, so this will be his main World Cup stage debut. Some of his recent career highlights include officiating the opening match of the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations held in Cote d'Ivoire, which reflects the level of trust he has earned from the Confederation of African Football.
And do we have information on his officiating style, any unique characteristics that we should be noting for or bracing for?
For starters, his day job is a lawyer. As such, several sports media outlets describe him as someone that makes systematic and accurate decisions, like a lawyer, and that he accurately and effectively utilizes positioning and advantage rules. Some experts highly regarded Omar's tendency to focus on maintaining the flow of the game rather than blowing the whistle for every little contact. So they're saying such style will enable the most technically advanced teams in world football today to truly shine at the World Cup.
Well, let's hope that Mr. Omar's laissez-faire style of officiating is helpful for the match this week. But moving on, what is our next story?
A new study shows a growing number of youths in Korea that experience emotional isolation, are turning to AI.
You know, the cliche and irony of today's digital world has been that despite our increasing connectedness, I think we're all feeling very disconnected. We all have so few people to turn to in times of trouble, but so seeking emotional refuge in AI sounds like an obvious choice. But first, Dan, can you tell us more about the research behind this conclusion?
Sure thing. On Tuesday, 오늘은, a nonprofit organization dedicated to studying youth-related issues and devising solutions, released the result of their report on youth emotional isolation based on studies conducted on some 480 male and female youths aged between 19 and 34. It showed that the number of youths experiencing concerning levels of emotional isolation, as in those who experience emotional isolation for a period longer than 3 months, rose from around 14% of the surveyed group in 2022 all the way to nearly 17% this year. And more than half of them turned to AI for needed emotional support rather than humans.
Well, 3 months without a source for comfort is tough. But the research that you're referring to appears to have also mentioned, quote, social isolation. How is this concept different from emotional isolation?
So social isolation involves lack of social context, as the words describe, and it also means lack of community interaction overall, but it does not automatically equate to someone feeling emotionally disconnected from other people. In contrast, emotional isolation describes a psychological state where a person avoids deep, meaningful connections with others, even while maintaining a social network. So one can feel emotionally isolated even while surrounded by friends and family and other people.
Well, both types of isolation are surely not fun. But what are the reasons these groups prefer to turn to AI instead of other people?
So emotional isolation often serves as a type of defense mechanism to avoid emotional distress. So with people, individuals with this condition, they might keep conversation superficial and repress their feelings when interacting with other human beings. The study shows that more than 54% said they prefer to turn to AI as they feel safe sharing their secrets and worries with AI. Over 47% said they turn to AI to sort out their feelings and thoughts without being interrupted or being challenged or being criticized. So the figures show that these groups perceive AI as a friend or even in some cases a confidant, more so than human friends or family.
Well, I want to tell everyone who feels alone right now that they're not alone. But now to our final story of today. Dan, what do you have for us?
An event that invites contestants to dress up as artifacts displayed at Korean museums. It's gaining a lot of attention. Applications only recently opened, and some fierce competition is expected for those who are fighting to be crowned winner.
It sounds like Halloween may have come early. Dan, can you get us better acquainted with this unique contest?
According to the National Museum of Korea on Tuesday, applications for the Dress Like a Museum exhibit contest opened on Monday, and it will continue receiving applicants, human applicants, eager to disguise themselves as artifacts through July 31st. As they have in last year's edition, participants wear costumes designed and created by themselves that reflect their creative interpretation of the relics, providing quite a sight for fans of ancient Korean relics as they can witness these items come alive and strut down a runway.
So a reminder to our listeners that this is an annual recurring event. But is this year's event bigger and grander than previous years, Dan?
Without a doubt, this year's edition is way bigger, with not just the National Museum of Korea in Seoul, but museums across the nation taking part in it. The provincial rounds kick off at the Chuncheon National Museum in Gangwon on September 5th. Contestants will represent artifacts at the Seoul, Chuncheon, and Jeju museums there. Provincial rounds will continue at more museums in different parts of the country, including Daegu National Museum. And the final round will be held at the National Museum of Korea in Yongsan, Central Seoul, on September 19th.
It almost sounds like a professional sports playoffs and a finals to crown a champion. But what kind of honors or rewards await these winners?
There's quite a generous amount of prize money given out to a lot more people than just one singular champion. Five of the 20 teams that advance to the main round will receive 3 million won, about $1,900 US in prize money. The other top five teams will earn 1 million won, and the remaining will claim 500,000 won. Some 40 candidates competing in the regional rounds will also earn 300,000 won as a participatory reward. The past contest showed how the younger generation has become bigger fans of museums and exhibits, with many young contestants jumping in to compete and flex their creative flair. This year, the costume designers will look to up the ante further and create works that can outshine the defending champions, including the duo that dress up as a pair of golden earrings from Hwanghodong Gyeongju of the Silla Kingdom, which is also treasure number 455.
That must have looked very golden. But that's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Dan, thank you for bringing us all the stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome to this week's edition of Hallyu Highlights, your weekly scoop on everything hot in Korean entertainment, from the latest K-pop hits to the K-dramas. Everyone's binging, and as usual, we are joined in the studio today by our resident K-culture expert, Bernie Cho. Bernie, great to see you again.
Oh, it's good to be back, and it's good to see you here again, Andrew.
Thank you. Summer is here again, and here on Hallyu Highlights, we'll be talking about the latest tours, hitting the arenas, stadiums, and later today, even the World Cup. But we go to our first story. SM Entertainment is apparently heading to Europe, according to a K-pop fan site overseas, but not with a boy band or girl band, but with an actual team of DJs to do a club and radio station tour in the UK and Europe. I did not take you as an EDM guy, but Bernie, tell us more.
Looks are deceiving.
Okay.
Yes. This is interesting because, you know, look, everybody knows SM Entertainment, obviously, for their super, super, superstar boy bands, girl bands. And then when the boy bands and girl bands decide to split off into subunits or, you know, collectives or solo gigs, that's kind of what SM has been known for. That's kind of their sound. That's kind of their style. That's kind of their trademark. Now, what a lot of people don't know is SM has dabbled with other music genres. So, for instance, they've had some of their big 90s boy band, girl band hits reinterpreted, or the what like some people like to call it, reinterpolated, big SAT word there, classical music. And for whatever reason, that went over really, really well. But what a lot of people don't know is among many of the labels and sub-labels at SM is they do have an EDM. And for those of you who do not know, electronic dance music label called Scream. Now, I don't know if you've been to a DJ party before. A lot of people actually don't scream, but whatever. They named it Scream. And if you look at the spelling, the S is capitalized and the M is capitalized. Quick trick question. Do you know why?
I have no clue.
S-M.
Ta-da. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's a bit of a visual cue. So over the years, they have been quietly building up this particular electronic label. And I was actually not only surprised and impressed that they're putting these DJs out on tour, but this was the number one trending story on all K-pop for the past few days. And these are DJs that are not just playing clubs. They're starting out literally and figuratively with a bang. They're going to be playing a show at South by Southwest London. They just did that a few days ago. Mm-hmm. And then they have a tour that's mixed of clubs as well as with radio stations, and not just in London, but Sheffield as well as Brighton. And then also they're going to make a trip down later in the month to Barcelona and to Germany. And what I love about these EDM tour dates is not only the club names, radio station names, but some of the acts or places or people they're collaborating with. So for starters, we got to give credit where credit's due. The tour lineup has not one, not two, three DJs with also a guest artist. And the DJs are, drum machine roll please, Imlay, Two Spade, and Arkins. And the guest artist is Yoonji, who will be playing in different cities, but we don't know which ones. But this is the kicker. So some of these are not just solo gigs. So, for instance, they're going to be playing with a record label called Half East. And then this is the one that got me. Color Factory is interesting. SCR, for those of you who don't know, is Seoul Community Radio. So they're going to be out in London as well. But this is the name that got my attention. They're teaming up with an entity. I don't know what else to call them. It's called Foreign Body Takeover.
What does that mean?
I have no idea, but my goodness, that is a great name for whoever it is or wherever it is. So be on the lookout. But look, it is a packed schedule. I was stunned and surprised. It's like literally like almost every 12 to 24 to 48 hours. They're almost like club slash radio hopping all over the UK and then bouncing down to continental Europe. But it's an interesting concept. It's great to see that SM is putting DJs front and center on the big stage. And, mm-hmm. you know, what better way to kick things off but South by Southwest London. So I look forward to seeing these DJs, hopefully when they roll back to Seoul. But I think this is great that not just K-pop, but Korean music is not only diversifying, but going way more dynamic. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to scream, but I think I'll clap for this one.
And others listening to this show might want to scream. This tour, as Bernie mentioned, goes to London, Sheffield, Brighton, Barcelona, and then Cologne.
You need to pronounce Barcelona with that slight lisp.
Barcelona. Okay. And now we go to our second story, which also involves SM Entertainment. The UK is buzzing, not with only the DJ show that we talked about, but with the new smash hit from their best-selling girl band, aespa, as the group, for the first time ever, has entered the UK charts with their latest earworm hit, Lemonade. Bernie, tell us more about this song, and I hear there is someone special who offered their services and was featured in the song. Who is that?
Well, this is a strange one, but it's a good one. So the video, as the kids like to say, is a banger. I mean, the video is just hyperkinetic, super colorful, just awesome. And I don't know what it is. All the girl bands are coming out with fruit juices right now. There's Lemonade, and then there's another song that came out recently from another girl band. But regardless, Lemonade is not only working, but it's owning the charts right now. As soon as it debuted, they had not only the local all kill, but they had the regional all kill. This month was the first time ever that one of the top Japanese services, Line Music, Korea's top local portal music service, Melon, and Tencent Music in China all got together and created the new global K chart. First week out, first month out, first day out, when this chart debuted last week, aespa hit first place, all the spots. So they got the all kill, but not local, regional. And that wasn't just enough. It did incredibly well on the Spotify global chart, went top 50. But more importantly is that this song, first time ever for them, they actually entered the UK official chart in the top 100. Granted, it was 95, but a first is a first is a first. And I think what's helping it is that they have numerous remixes, and each of the remixes represent each of the members of the band. But this is the kicker. There are 16 different versions of this song. And and what's interesting is that this is also part of their new album. And with this new album, which is called Lemonade nonetheless, it didn't just have one, it had two singles, and they dropped them both at the same, almost at the same time. The first single that they dropped, which I don't think we talked about, but it was WDA, Whole Different Animal, which featured G-Dragon. But then right when they dropped it, usually you just let that thing breathe, you let it chart, you let it just go on its course. But no, right after that was out of the gate, they pushed Lemonade out at the same time. And so this particular song is just really lighting it up right now. And this particular album has quite a few guest features. So in addition to, obviously, G-Dragon, but Tyler Dollar Sign is on it, as well as global pop star Becky G. So an interesting album, banging single, and it is just moving up and down the charts right now. So well done, and I think we're going to hear more from this song because it is infectious. And, you know, I was a little bit startled as I didn't actually know the album was being promoted. So I was like, why are all these massive pop-up Lemonade stands coming out all over the city? Turns out it's not actually Lemonade. It's actually for the album. And so a little pleasantly deceptive advertising, but, you know, I fell for it. But nonetheless, these ladies are going to be incredibly busy because as they're promoting this song, this album, this video, they will be extremely busy, not only going to all the various pop-up stores in and around Seoul, But they're going to have a very busy concert and festival schedule, as well as all the chart shows on TV. So be on the lookout. aespa is everywhere. And currently, first time ever, regional all kill. Number one China, number one Japan, number one Korea.
And we'll be looking out for that. But another girl group, Le Sserafim, has been riding high in the UK official singles chart. Who they've had also their own smash hit single, Boom Pala. Surge of massive, impressive 55 spots from 77 to 22 this week. Bernie, what's behind this big jump? And finally, what's next for Le Sserafim? Where will they be performing?
So you know what? This is rare. Look, they, you know, granted they made it onto the charts, but a 55 ranking jump in a week. Usually when K-pop songs debut, mm-hmm. they start strong and then they kind of slowly, quietly, or sometimes quickly fade. Mm-hmm. But this one is not just gaining momentum. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is having a moment right now. And the fact that it has jumped, and again, this isn't just a one-off. It was not a jump just on the UK charts. Mm-hmm. It happened on the Spotify charts. It happened on the Apple iTunes charts. And so it's been really interesting that although the song's been out now for a few weeks, it continues to climb. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be interesting to see how much further and farther and more importantly, maybe faster this song will go to the top of the charts. And again, great song. And the ladies of Le Sserafim are incredibly busy. They just played the Weverse Con Festival over the weekend down mm-hmm. at Seoul's Olympic Park. And then they're on a plane right now, probably headed to Los Angeles. They're going to be attending and I believe also performing at the Snapchat Under the Ghost event in LA. And then literally the day after, they're going to be at the iHeartRadio Live with TikTok. Mm. So very busy ladies, but they could not ask for better timing to have this song. Oh, my goodness, smack me because this is low-hanging fruit. Have it boom the way it is right now. Boom Pala, Le Sserafim, be on the lookout and watch out.
And while we're talking about LA, we also have some news about the World Cup. This song that we're going to be talking about, also expected to surge on the charts, is a latest single or anthem or cheer song for the Korean national football team and the 2026 World Cup. Dream With Us by K-pop boy band TWS, slated to drop officially on June 11th. Lucky fans got to watch the recent exhibition game between Team Korea and El Salvador on June 4th, got a sneak peek at this new song. Bernie, your thoughts on the song, and what are some other famous artists who have contributed to the World Cup past and present?
Well, right now, we've obviously talked about the fact that Lisa is going to be performing during one of the opening ceremonies. And she's out with not only a new music video, but also, if you had the chance, she's in a new TV commercial.
Oh.
You know, it's for one of the big sportswear brands that happens to be sponsoring the Korean national team. Mm. And it has a sort of big buffet of top football stars, or for those in America, because it's in the U.S. and North America, soccer stars. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But a lot of celebrities make cameos. And, you know, I mean, this is such a frantic short film commercial ad. I don't know what to call it, work of art. But you can quickly see Lisa's there. It's like, oh, here we go, familiar face. And then obviously the big news, that first time ever, there's going to be a halftime show at the World Cup, and it's going to feature Madonna.
Nice.
And BTS.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that was big enough. And you know what? Korea could have just rested on their laurels. But no, we've got TWS coming out with this particular new song. And I think it's really clever that during these exhibition games, mm-hmm. the Korean national team are not only showing off their alternative jerseys, which in this case, the uniforms and the kits and the outfits were designed by none other than G-Dragon.
Oh.
So already a lot of social media buzz on just how super fly and super fashionable the Korean national team looks. But to top it off is having the new song Dream With Us debut. It was pleasantly, deliberately leaked, and it's great. So there's going to be a few more opportunities, I think, to hear the song, but it officially drops on June 11th. And traditionally, historically, usually World Cup theme songs chart local countries, and sometimes they go global. Mm-hmm. Two of my favorite songs, one was done by U2 on the last World Cup. Uh-huh. It was a nice black and white rooftop video with a DJ. There was one ages ago that I liked from the UK with New Order, A Little Weak. And then one of the bigger songs from way back in the day, and this might date a lot of listeners, but Ricky Martin.
Oh, Ricky Martin. Okay.
Yes, he had a big one as well. So, but unfortunately, with the nature of World Cup songs, they can be hits or misses. So, but this one, I think it's a safe bet. It will likely be a hit.
That's it for this week's Hollywood Highlights. As always, thank you for joining us, Bernie. Thank you very much.
All good. Let's hang out next week.
Yes. And that's a wrap for today's edition of Korea 24, but we'll be back tomorrow. Again, you can always listen to Korea 24 on various apps, KBS Kong, KBS World Radio, and KBS World Radio on air at 7:10 p.m. Korea Standard Time every weekday. I've been your host, Andrew Jung. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
KBS World Radio.